Good morning, everyone. Welcome into Morning Invest on this Tuesday. I am in a good mood. We've only got 24 hours left in the Trump presidency. It feels good. It feels like, you know, tomorrow we're all going to want to wake up and just take like a long shower. One day, 3 hours and 4 minutes left of the Trump presidency. I feel like it really is like the calm before the storm. So good morning. Welcome into the show. We've got a lot of news to get to. A flurry of pardons are coming today. A flurry of them. It's like a snowstorm of pardons. This whole bunch of names on this list, it looks like. But most of the mainstream media attention, of course, has been on the potential ne'er-do-wells, you know, like the felons, etc., who would be a part of this pardon list. But there's one or two big names that we're hoping the president will pardon. And there was a big push last night on the mainstream media. And I'm going to show you this this piece of video that has gone viral this morning, and I want you to watch it with an open mind, because it really is one of the more astounding messages sent directly to the president on one big pardon that we're all hoping for. Fingers crossed. We'll get to that this morning. With 24 hours left in the Trump presidency, are Democrats about to cave to Republicans on a power-sharing agreement? We're going to talk about what's going on here, and let's not jump to conclusions, because when the mainstream media tells you something, you have to filter it. You have to take it through a sieve before you jump to conclusions. Also, Republicans are trying to stop and cancel the student debt cancellation program. They're basically resurrecting the dead body of Antonin Scalia to make an argument against eliminating student debt in this country, something that could dramatically alter our children's future, could totally change an entire generation, probably two generations of Americans, if we're able to get rid of the student loan debt up to $50,000 or entirely. So we'll get to that this morning. Janet Yellen is going to face the Senate in a confirmation hearing today as Treasury Secretary. Let's see. Oh, one big other story we're going to cover today. The Trump administration gives one last middle finger to the American education establishment. We'll tell you about that. It's the new 1776 report. This will not be covered in the mainstream media. That's why you watch our show. And I want to say thank you so much for becoming a channel member, supporting independent journalism, getting your news right here every morning. I really, really appreciate it. And look, with all of these government agencies snooping on everyone, all of these people doing horrible things, collecting our data, going through our computers, big companies, big tech, selling all of our private information, that's why you need a VPN. And so our friends today over at VPN Vanish are sponsoring the show today, and they make online security easy and very, very cheap. You're going to get a 65% discount just for trying it out. Go to ipvanish.com/morninginvest to get your 65% discount. And what you need to know about IP Vanish is they've got a full service team. You can talk to them via email, chat with them, or get on the phone. They will set up a virtual private network for you with over 15,000 different locations around the world so that your data is encrypted and protected and away from any prying eyes from the government or God knows who else, other bad guys that want to steal your data and hack your data, especially if you're on like public Wi-Fi. Super easy to set up. It basically blocks anybody from getting access, keeps all of your information private, like your location data, your personal identity, your browsing history, when you use the internet on any computer or mobile device. What you do on the internet should be your business and no one else's. And all of these companies are trying to sell your information. You need a VPN. So go to ipvanish.com/morninginvest to get 65% off just for trying them out. You will not be disappointed. So our thanks for supporting our show. Really thank you guys at IP Vanish for that.
Your internet should be like Las Vegas. Whatever happens on it should stay on it.
Yeah, where do you come down on the VPN debate? I mean, what's your thought on that?
Me personally, I've never used one. So I, my stuff is all out there. I don't even put virus protection on any of my machines either. Like I'm a renegade.
Well, virus protection stuff doesn't work. I don't even, that stuff's garbage.
Yeah.
But like using, especially when you're on like public Wi-Fi, like if you go to Starbucks or cafe or something and you're on that like public Wi-Fi and people are sitting there snooping at your banking data or any of your other data. I mean, all you need to do is watch the movie Snowden to see how this stuff happens. So protect yourself, protect your identity with a virtual private network.
It's like one of those things.
I have my whole family using it.
It's like one of those things that I know I should, but it's like the hassle of setting it all up. Because like when I live stream, I don't know like if that would close sockets as far as me sending out a signal or getting a signal. You know what I mean? Because of all the stuff that I have incoming and outgoing from my house.
Well, that's a little different. Like running a live stream is like a little bit different, I think. But yeah, just doing like your online banking and all that should be very, very important. So we're going to talk about a little bit more about privacy on the show today as we get into some of the news headlines this morning. But well, there is going to be a flurry of pardons. So let's get to the news. This is the last 24 hours of the Trump presidency. Here we go. 1 day, 2 hours, 58 minutes and 36 seconds is the countdown until Trump is being evicted from the White House. There's already moving vans down at Mar-a-Lago. They've been carrying out all of the MyPillows and taking them down to Mar-a-Lago in Florida, where Trump will set up camp after he leaves the White House. You know, but it's interesting to look at Washington, D.C. this morning. Take a look at this. I mean, this is Washington, D.C. This is your nation's capital. This is what a peaceful transition of power looks like.
Yeah, and I have a feeling
peaceful transition of power.
I have a feeling that's not going away after this either. I have a feeling that's a permanent thing now.
Well, you might be right because the DC mayor has come out and said this is going to perhaps be our new norm in Washington DC. Look at this. This is Washington DC. The freest country in the world. A peaceful transition of power. We take care of our people in the United States. We take care of our people so much so that we're scared of our people.
I mean, that's what authoritarian countries look like.
Terrified of our people. Right. Why? Because they're scared. Peaceful transition of power. Jake Sherman tweeting this on his way into Washington this morning. Says it all. Zoom in on that a little bit. Can you guys see that? Let me zoom in a little tighter on that. It's a pretty simple message here, which is avoid travel to DC. Don't come anywhere near your nation's capital. Avoid travel to DC on January 20th because it's going to look like a friggin' war zone. I mean, this is, it really is astonishing to see.
Well, and what is scary is
we've never had like
what I was talking about. Tay Flint is saying DC looks like a prison and said that Amber said DC should stay that way, to be honest, if Biden doesn't want to die. And the thing is, like, that's exactly like I said last week, I was like, it's not like with this whole Capitol thing and them like being let in or whatever. And this might sound like a conspiracy theory, but I was like, you got to watch what they do after this happens to see what they really wanted to do. And the fact that now people are cheering for this. Yes, this needs to happen. This needs to happen to protect the president or whatever. And it's like now the military is going to be permanently stationed at the Capitol where people protest, that's the only place you can go to grieve or air your grievances sometimes. And I think you're right. I think they're scared.
Yeah, they're scared. And this is going to be the new normal where there's going to be a permanent police state in our nation's capital. And by the way, like DC is not even, it's not a state, right? So this is like, it's like a cloistered separate country in a way, right? There's no representatives in Washington. There's a DC mayor who has this incredible power and that's it. They have no representatives in Congress. There's no senators for Washington, DC. And this is like, it is, it's like looking at an authoritarian style government. You know, you don't see this in like other countries that take care of its citizenry around the world. Why are we so concerned? We're concerned on the left. Oh, that Biden's going to get hurt. We're concerned on the right that there's going to be more damage. There's going to be attacks against establishment Republicans.
You know, I think if they're going to,
there are still worries of coordinated attacks.
I think if they're going to do this, they should make the military wear funny hats though, so that people can mess with them like the Royal Guard, if they're going to be there. You know what I mean? Like, I think they should have little, like
big,
yeah, big white hats.
Yeah. And they can't talk. They have to have a chin strap that comes down uncomfortably, like right here. I never understood that. Why do you wear a chin strap that comes down like here?
Like, just keep it. And it's, you got to stand there like all day guarding the queen with this like little black chin strap down here.
Yeah,
how is
that
comfortable?
Would, yeah,
is I it couldn't. So you can't talk?
Yeah, it holds your bottom lip up against your face.
Yeah. So there's going to be a flurry of pardons over the next 24 hours. There's already been a few. We're waiting to see who on the felons list will get in and get out. There is some concern this morning about, well, in the mainstream media. Let's talk about the mainstream media angle on this. The mainstream media coverage of this is going to be all about, you know, who are the bad guys? Is it the Steve Bannons? Is it these other folks? Who are these bad guys that are going to get pardons from Donald Trump? Who are the people, we covered this last night, that are going to pay Rudy Giuliani $2 million in order to get a pardon, right? And that's all fine, right? We should be having those conversations. But what the mainstream media is not covering, save perhaps one individual, I'm talking the mainstream media, I'm talking your Fox News's, your CNN's, your MSNBC's, they don't want Julian Assange or Edward Snowden to get pardons. Because these individuals embarrassed the elite class. They embarrassed the billionaires. They embarrassed those people in power. They embarrassed government. They shined a light on the darkest parts of our government, showing the snooping, the spying that was going on average Americans. Well, there's been a big push. I have been among them to pardon Julian Assange for calling attention to war crimes, to pardon Edward Snowden for shining a light on our government, which was snooping and spying on Americans without our authorization, and the government lied right to us. And these people are having to live in, Julian Assange has to live in a prison in London. Edward Snowden, I think, is holed up in Russia somewhere. And these people can't come back to the United States for fear of retribution. So I want you to watch this unbelievable segment from last night. I want you to watch it with an open mind, okay? Pretend, take away all of your political bias towards this individual, and I want you to hear what he's saying. He's been one of the only people who's been outspoken about pardoning Julian Assange, and this message came perfectly timed with 24 hours left. President Trump, pay attention to this segment. Watch.
Well, it doesn't happen that much when everyone in Washington agrees with one another on something. But when it does, ooh, when Democrats, Republicans, and the media all sound alike, all sing the same song from the same hymnal, when Nancy Pelosi talks about Venezuelan coups like the neocon she actually is, you ought to be nervous about that. Institutional Washington is by far at its most dangerous when there's consensus, when it stops reflecting the will of the voters and starts defending its own interests without any opposition whatsoever. There may be no issue that unites the establishment wings of both political parties, other than fighting pointless wars, more than this issue. And it's here it is. Leaking classified information that hurts the permanent political class is a grave threat to national security. It must be stamped out. But leaking classified information that helps the permanent political class is an act of good faith. Son, you're getting a Pulitzer for that. So there was no problem when the FBI told the Washington Post that that diabolical Vladimir Putin was secretly running our government. That was a lie, but not a problem. Or when the CIA director gave classified information to the producers of Zero Dark Thirty, because that's Hollywood and they're our friends. But when those leaks implicate the people in charge, oh, it's a national crisis and someone needs to go to jail. And often people do go to jail. Julian Assange, for example, he's rotting away in a prison in London right now. Why? He published information that the U.S. government wanted to keep secret, not to protect us, but to protect themselves. Footage of an American helicopter gunning down 18 people in Iraq, including, by the way, two journalists from Reuters. He also publicized emails exposing corruption at the very highest levels of the DNC. Bernie Sanders voters may have been grateful for that. They got completely shafted and wouldn't have known it. Now they do. And that infuriated the people who run Washington. Just to be clear, Julian Assange did not hack servers at the U.S. Army, the Pentagon, the DNC. No, he reported on those servers. That's called journalism, which, by the way, real journalism, not much left. It's all under attack. Trust us. So for doing that, for humiliating both our elected leaders and the media class, Julian Assange's life has been destroyed. He's been locked away for almost a decade. This case is not about espionage. He didn't commit espionage. He's not a traitor. He's not American. This case is about criminalizing freedom of speech. The mother of Julian Assange's children came on this show last year and made that point very succinctly. Watch.
Julian is the foremost, perhaps the foremost free speech campaigner alive in the West, and he's imprisoned. And does the president want that to be his legacy, or does he want to, you know, ensure that the First Amendment survives this trial and survives by, you know, pardoning him and not having this trial?
No one who works on this show ever imagined we'd be where we are now, which is in effect defending Julian Assange. But the truth is, we're not defending Julian Assange. We're defending something that is actually under attack, that is actually precious to every American, and that is going away faster than we ever thought it could, and that's the freedom of speech. He reported things they don't like, they threw him in jail. If it happened to him, why couldn't it happen to you again? Speak slowly so we can understand. And if that doesn't convince you, consider the case of another person we've also had on the show quite a bit, a very decent man, by the way, called John Kiriakou. He's a 15-year veteran of the CIA. He led some of the military's most important raids in Pakistan during his career, risked his life for the country. But then in 2007, he did something that destroyed his life. He confirmed something on the record that no one else in government was willing to admit at the time, that the U.S. Army was, in fact, waterboarding, torturing prisoners. Now, you may support that or you may not, but if you're an American citizen who pays for all this stuff, why don't you have a right to know that? Now, the DOJ at the time did not think John Kiriakou had committed a crime. What he said was true. He was treated as a whistleblower, which he was, agree with him or not. But 5 years later, the CIA, which was still furious about it, told the Obama administration, which was in the habit of obeying the CIA, to reopen that case and punish John Kiriakou. So they did, and of course they found a crime. It's not hard for prosecutors to find a crime when they're bent on retribution meant to encourage the others. So John Kiriakou went to prison for 2 years. He can no longer, to this day, a man who served his country for 15 years, defend his family with a firearm because he's a convicted felon. They'll give him his voting rights back, but not the right to defend his family. So here's why we're telling you this. The president, on his last day in office, is expected to announce a series of pardons before he leaves on Wednesday. Some news reports tell us that he will pardon the rapper Lil Wayne on a firearm charge. We don't know if that's true or not. We don't even have an opinion on that. But we do know if he wants a lasting historical effect on this country in the closing days of his administration, he can achieve a major victory for the principles that this country was founded on and that make it a good place to live. And the first one of those is freedom of the press, freedom of speech. No one else in the media feels like arguing for it. It doesn't matter. It's still true, and we should still defend it. And he should pardon Julian Assange, and he should pardon John Kiriakou.
Wow.
He says Trump can achieve a major victory for the principles that this country was founded on and make it a good place to live again. Make a statement in our defense. Defend the Bill of Rights. But the mainstream media is more concerned about talking about Lil Wayne is going to get a pardon. And no coverage of Julian Assange because he embarrassed them. And Edward Snowden embarrassed them. I mean, say what you want about Tucker. No one else in the mainstream media is covering that story. And to devote an entire section of his show, the most popular show on Fox News, to this topic, and we know that that President Trump, at least in the past, has liked that show, maybe he hears it. That's the reason Jimmy Dore goes on that show, to get a message across.
Isn't he the most
pardoning Julian Assange?
Isn't he the most popular show, period, right now? Or, like, what's bigger?
Yeah. Well, he was, but, well, that's true. I think he still is by a long shot. But I think, you know, Fox has dropped precipitously after the riots and during the post-election coverage. CNN has skyrocketed. So that's why I asked you to watch it with an open mind, because what do you, you know, do you agree with it? Do you disagree with it? I agree with everything he said there. That the only reason we know about these atrocities and these war crimes is because he reported on this information that was gleaned from these different servers. The only reason we know about what happened at the DNC against Bernie Sanders is because of Julian Assange. And it was embarrassing. I remember interviewing Donna Brazile the morning after this all happened, and she was like befuddled. Because she had to step in as an interim DNC chair. I interviewed her on the floor of the Republican National Convention in Cleveland. Actually, no, I'm sorry. Was it in Cleveland? Was it at the DNC? I forget which of the two. They were a week apart. I think it might have been at the DNC in Philadelphia. Nevertheless, she didn't know what to say. And she was not embarrassed. Now, there was nothing wrong with those emails. Oh, yeah? There was a concerted effort against Bernie Sanders, making sure that he would be primaried. He would not be the nominee. This is from the we're supposed to be nonpartisan. We're supposed to be the DNC, whoever you guys want. Do you guys want Bernie Sanders? Great, we'll support you. No, we're going to make a concerted effort to make sure that Bernie Sanders is not your candidate. The only reason we know that is because of Julian Assange. So this is not a partisan issue to me. This is a freedom of the press issue. And reporting on war crimes should not get you in trouble with the federal government. Should not put you behind bars in a foreign country, rotting away. As we've seen journalist after journalist being harangued by members of the deep state, members of the military state, they don't want the apple cart upturned. That's why when you go on CNN or MSNBC, these other channels, they want you to have this nice watered down version. We're protecting America by increasing our military. That's what they want you to believe. And that's why they're embarrassed by Julian Assange. And wouldn't it be a big F you? By the way, it's not going to happen under Biden. So if you're sitting there saying, well, why wouldn't Biden do it? You kidding? I mean, they sees them as an enemy.
Biden took it upon himself personally to keep Snowden out of the country. Like not tell somebody else to do it. He took responsibility personally.
Right. So it's not going to happen under Biden. So I know we're kind of talking about this last 24 hours, and there's a lot to like about this next 24 hours and this last bit of the Trump presidency. But there's one thing that he could leave on, which would be astonishing, which would be to pardon Julian Assange and not make him have to live in fear and live in a London prison while he awaits this continuous extradition trial after extradition hearing back to the United States. So let me know your thoughts on that. I would love to hear your thoughts on that in the chat. I believe we have a special guest on the show today.
Well, if you believe it will happen.
Good. That's what I'm hoping for. So I believe we have a special guest who's going to be joining us in a second. But first, I want to sort of set the stage on this story. And the special guest, by the way, is my wife, who's a brilliant human being. An excellent writer and a great thinker on all things that are important to, should be to your family, to your kids. And one of the big issues that she's a big proponent of is education. And this 1776 report has just been released. The 776 report, the 1776 report is a study done by the White House that President Trump last year called on to try to maybe elevate American exceptionalism once again. Felt like, you know what? In our schools, there's a liberal agenda to denigrate our founding fathers, to teach our kids that, oh my God, they had slaves. To teach our kids that, oh my gosh, women weren't allowed to vote until, you know, the last century. We should maybe teach our kids those things, but let's hand it to them on a pillow and completely soften its edges. Make it more palatable for these children to swallow the truth. But actually, in the meantime, let's lie to these children. So on the day before President Trump leaves office, we finally get this 1776 report released. And we wrote about it in the newsletter this morning. Natalie wrote a big piece in the newsletter this morning. And so my wife, lovely Natalie Morris, is joining us now to talk all about this ridiculous 1776 report. I believe she's here. Is she here?
She is. There she is.
She is.
All right. She's here. There she is. Okay, so she's here. So can you sum up for me? Did I give it any credence? Can you explain to me what the 1776 report is all about?
Yes, I can. So during the Black movement of the summer, when there was an uprising and a reimagining of the history of the American founding, You may remember that there was a movement to remove slave-owning statues. There was a movement to talk about why this racism lay in our very government and why some people experience race relations so much differently, because there is a contingency of the population that thinks slaves are free, civil rights happened, it's all equal now, it's all fine. And so as a part of this educational movement over the summer, people were trying to say, actually, it's never been totally fine. Let's go all the way back and figure out why. Well, the reaction to that was to commission this study. And so he said that he wanted a group of experts to get together and study education of the founding fathers, basically telling our history with a through a lens of more than just white men, right? And he wanted this study done. Well, we didn't think much of it, but it was enough that I went to my school's principal and I asked them, how will this affect our curriculum? And she said, the administrator of my school, who is a very erudite woman, I really respect her, and she responds to everything in a measured way. And so I was really grateful for this response. And she said, look, this is a political move, because the federal government does not set educational standards, the states do. And so very little of what he says here will be implemented into policy. And that is true, actually. There's a great woman named Diane Ravitch. If you're interested in studying the way American educational policy is implemented and conceived of in America, I highly suggest her work. The woman's named Diane Ravitch. I'll put it in the chat later when I'm not looking straight at the camera. So I knew that this study would come out, but it would not really affect what happens to our children in their education in primary school in America. But worthy of concern. So I sat myself down this morning with a cup of coffee and I read it. And it's about 40 pages. And what it is, a love letter to American founding fathers. And there's some of the, it's kind of the way it sort of frames them as slave owners. I want to say I really wanted to be open to it. I didn't want to just not like it because I already had some opinion from my school administrator. I was like, maybe this won't be, you know, what Trump wants it to be. Maybe academic study of history. It really was not that. And the reason I think we can discuss it or should discuss it is because it will embolden people who feel so connected to these founding fathers as these biblical level heroes that they won't see the certain pieces of inequality that were sewn into the fabric of our country. And it's dangerous to immortalize someone in only their virtues and not their imperfections, right? And so this document says that the goal of education should basically be to encourage, this is a direct quote, to encourage citizens to embrace and cultivate love of country. You know, statewide education is something we talk about as a bad thing as it relates to China and Germany and Russia. Like, there's so many things that are wrong with this, and I think a positive discussion over what it is worthy, but only for today, because after tomorrow, we won't have this same president. He won't have the same megaphone to say these things, but take it up. That's another question that's a discussion. So where would you like to start?
Well, I mean, one piece in this, and is this chunk I pulled out here, which is on slavery. And I think that David Corn tweeted this, which is great. Hey, don't be so upset about American slavery. That's what Trump's new 1776 report suggests. And I'll just kind of show you what it says here. Slavery, the most common charge leveled against the founders and hence against our country itself, is that they were hypocrites who didn't believe in their stated principles. And therefore, the country they built rests on a lie. This charge is untrue and has done enormous damage, especially in recent years, with a devastating effect on our civic unity and social fabric. Many Americans labor under the illusion that slavery was somehow a uniquely American evil. Does anyone, by the way, think that? Also, it says it's essential to insist at the outset that the institution be seen in a much broader perspective. It's very hard for people brought up in the comforts of modern America in a time in which that idea that all human beings have inviolable rights and inherent dignity is almost taken for granted. To imagine the cruelties and enormities that were endemic in earlier times. But the unfortunate fact is that the institution of slavery has been more the rule than the exception throughout human history. So basically, the argument is, as this one tweeter put it, they're arguing, hey, everyone else was engaging in slavery, so it's okay that the U.S. was. What the heck?
It says nothing about the economic advantages that slavery afforded the wealth of this nation. Actually how that affects people who are descendants of those slaves. It is not written at all for anyone who is any color other than white. And I think that the fear behind it is that we will see Thomas Jefferson and, you know, John Adams and all of these founding fathers as someone who, George Washington, as people who are bad guys, right? And I think the goal of education is not to see anybody as good or bad, is to see people in the context of their lives so that we can apply that to the context of our lives and not make the same mistakes or learn from the bravery and the mistakes, right? Our founding father, our history book, pretend that these men were very conflicted about slavery and they just kind of put it aside in their back pocket and went on. No, their lives actually actively depended on it. Actively. And when they decided to open up the world and say, well, maybe Black people can have some kind of education, there was such a thing as like a paper bag test where your skin had to be lighter than a paper bag. And if it was darker, like, not you, you're not the smartest one. They used the Bible, they used evolutionary theory to suggest that these people were less than us. These things have a consequence. And if you think that, like, you can just sort of put it in your pocket, but eyes, treat these people as heroes, you're so much of the story, right? For instance, my son the other day came home telling me all about Vasco da Gama, who is Portuguese explorer, and saying that he was a really heroic person. And I said, interesting, he was actually, you know, a brave sailor. He was also a war criminal who went on expeditions to kill Muslims. Did they tell you that too? And he said, no, we didn't get to that. And I said, okay, this is an important part of context. I am not opposed to celebrating the heroic act of sailing around the tip of Africa. That was hard. I can't do it. I wouldn't sail out and try, right? But we have to have context around these things because the purpose of those expeditions was actually really racist and dangerous and the inception of globalism. And you can't just say, like, but I like it this way, right?
Right. Let's just wrap it up in a nice pillow and sugarcoat it. Here's a look at the report. The President's Advisory 1776 Commission, which comes out, which came out yesterday, and it's already being labeled as a total hack job. The Washington Post called it a total hack job, a rewriting of history. How many pages? This thing is like 40 pages. So if you got some extra time on your hand and you want to read how the Trump administration believes that we should teach history to our children, sit down, grab a cup of coffee, grab a highlighter and go through. By the way, I love that they use a picture of George Washington. Here's George Washington crossing the Delaware River, which, by the way, if you know anything about George Washington crossing the Delaware River, this is not what it looked like. It was not this. He's in the front of a boat with the wind whipping through his head. This was not what it was like. Okay. It was not glamorous. They were all torn and tattered. It was freezing. There was none of this stuff, but this is what we're spoon feeding our children. And this is what the Trump administration's hopes will happen. I saw someone in the chat saying, I think Stephen Miller probably wrote this. Wouldn't doubt it.
I think there was that. If you scroll to the bottom, it's who was in it. There's even Mike Pompeo's name here. I don't have it in front of me. In the end, who was responsible for it. Let's see, Stephen Miller here.
Hey, Clayton, can you zoom in on that?
I don't see it on a cursory glance.
Yeah, I'll try to zoom in on that a little bit. These are the people responsible for...
It inexplicably a picture of Martin Luther King in the very beginning, but there's no real mention of him until later in the report. So I think that, again, we will be able to throw this away after tomorrow. It will not influence any policy, but it will sort of be a blueprint for people who are so attached to their version of history moving forward. And so for that reason, it's worth reading and which parts of it you reject. It's not, is part of it that is, that talks about how there are certain American ideals of freedom of religion, which is good, and why we need to look back at the heroic act of American founding fathers who threw off the hegemony of a different place. That is fine. So you don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. But again, anyone who wants to fight against one-sided history, then it's worth reading this and say, no, I reject this. And some of it is just categorically untrue. For instance, it says that independence laid groundwork for the abolition movement and helped abolish slavery in other advanced countries. That's false. In England, they abolished slavery 30 years before we did. In fact, Thomas Jefferson, you know, he had this wife who was Black. They weren't married. He had a mistress, I suppose, and they had a few children together. And their plan to free her was to go to France because he was a big Europhile. He took her with her to France where she experienced a lot of freedom. And she was going to free herself and stay in France instead of go back as a slave to the United States. And that would allow their son to be raised as a free person. And when it came for him to go back, he couldn't do it. And he bribed her. He was like, I will never sell our child. I will treat you good. You'll get your own house. You'll get your own, you know, you'll be elevated. I'll take good care of you. And she got talked into it. But their plan, or at least her plan, was to stay in France and become a free woman, which tells you that it is not true that the United States was the inception of the abolition movement. France and England, at the very least, had free slaves before we did.
Absolutely. So there you go. So the 1776 report stinks. As someone in the chat says, it blows. We get it.
Well, and anything.
But I love anything. That
go ahead.
I was going to say, look at the people that wrote it. Involved in Michael Pompeo.
Yeah, I was Ben just going to say, anything that has Michael Pompeo's name on it, you should just automatically disregard.
Oh, that's golden. Yeah, thanks, Michael Pompeo, for your amazing thing. Thank you, Natalie. I'll see you for lunch. Love you.
Bye.
So,
wait, I got to get her.
Thanks,
wave,
everyone. That was
wave.
My wife.
Goodbye, Natalie.
Oh, wave. Bye. So, I mean, it's absolutely humiliating. And you know, as a student of history, as a person with a history major, I mean, you can read through this thing and say to yourself, my God, this thing is so poorly written, so poorly researched. Anyone with even a, you know, a 4-year history degree that understands American history could know how bad this thing is. So the Washington Post, I love their headline today, calling this thing a hack job. Embarrassment. It's an outright lie.
Well, you know what happened? Trump probably wrote it and then handed it to them, and then they edited it for him to make it sound at least somewhat, you know, it's probably something he wrote while he was in between tweeting.
Oh my God. He was on the toilet and he wrote this thing. Yeah. We're going to work on getting Natalie a better camera in the new studio. I'm going to have a wife camera set up.
Yes.
So when she wants to, we're going to get a wife camera set up, just like Grover Cam. We're going to have wife cam, and she's going to take over the show. But I came after this morning, I walked Grover, and she's there reading this 40-page report, and she's like, I am so mad. I said, you're coming on the show. You're coming on. We're going to talk about it. So thank you to my
I'm mad as hell and I can't take it anymore.
It's infuriating. It's infuriating to think that like your kids come home from school and be like, hey, you know, don't get so upset about American slavery. That's just what Trump's 1776 reports says. So I came home from school. My kids come home from school and they're like, hey, you know, slavery wasn't that bad. Reminds me of what Bill O'Reilly had to say. Remember a few years ago when Michelle Obama talked about the White House being built with slaves and Bill O'Reilly comes out and is like, yeah, but they were really well fed. They were really well fed. They had a lot of good food. Oh, okay. Don't mind the fact that they're under chains and they live in bondage. But just because they were working on the White House, they got some extra. They got an extra partridge that day. They were well fed. Thanks, Bill O'Reilly. Bill O'Reilly said, quote, they were well fed and had decent lodgings provided by the government. Oh, thank you.
What's decent to him?
Thank you. Thanks, Bill O'Reilly.
Decent to him is probably right. Shelter from the rain. Well, they weren't getting wet in the rain.
Thanks, Bill O'Reilly. They were out in the blistering sun of Washington. By the way, do you know Washington, D.C. is built on a swamp? So you literally, it's built on a swamp. So they had to drain it first. So, you know, they have these slaves working in this ungodly heat to build the White House. And Michelle Obama makes reference to the fact that, wow, this is an unbelievable moment that, you know, moving into the White House. And so many people on the right were so upset that she brought this up. Don't, you know, she just can't say it. Might be true. We just can't say it. That slaves built the White House. Don't say it. We don't want to teach our kids that. No, 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 no. Can't hear you. And Bill O'Reilly's, you know, like, yeah, but well, and you they know, had good food. They were well fed.
look at what they teach German kids in German history classes. Like, they don't hide from their past. They don't sugarcoat it. They teach them what happened so that it's not repeated.
They teach it's part of their curriculum in Germany to teach about the Third Reich. They all know about it. And that was an important part of their healing process. It's still, every child learns about the Holocaust in Germany. They could just as easily go the opposite direction, which is to pretend it never happened. But no, Germany makes an important part of their history to teach about this so it never happens again. That they never elect fascist regime in their country. That it never happens again. This sort of you know, sugarcoating of history, this rewriting of history, can lead to this type of authoritarianism.
Well, and I even remember
get back to this American exceptionalism.
I remember in my history classes basically being taught that all Indians were savages. I mean, I when I got out of school and I started studying Indian history, I was like, wow, that's not at all what I was taught. Like, I had to relearn history on my own. Had I not went down that rabbit hole on my own, I never would have known that. I would have lived life thinking all these Indians were savages.
Native American history was a big part of my my history degree, and so I'm with you on that. In elementary school, we were taught that, like, hey, Thanksgiving was a great time. Everyone got together at a table. Sharing maize and teaching them how to make popcorn. And oh yeah, that's really what it was like. Really? Until you understand, like, look at modern Native American history right now. I mean, just think about how these tribes, these reservations have been decimated by COVID. It's a brutal history, absolutely brutal history. And, you know, some of these American presidents like Andrew Jackson, who are sort of held up with their wild hair on what bill is Andrew Jackson on? What is he on, the $20 bill? Or was?
Yes,
I know they're going to switch that out. I don't know. I only have hundreds, otherwise I'd look. Sorry. No, I don't. I never have cash, so I couldn't even answer if you're like, who's on the penny? I'm lucky, like, I know who's on that. Yeah, I think Andrew Jackson. But anyway, we hold these guys up as, like, you know, heroes. Yeah. These presidents who helped decimate, basically genocide, Native American history in this country. Sharon Pullman, thank you so much for your comment. Clayton, David, Natalie, talking about this subject, shedding light on people's ignorance. Thank you. Corey says, yeah, if you took my land and killed my family, I'd be savage also. Right. Yeah, great point.
You imagine how much different like life son, would be if we would have incorporated some of the things that they knew into our life, like how communal they were, how they didn't, you know, waste any part of anything that they took. You know, like we kill all this meat and everything, and we just like willy-nilly throw things in the trash, and we cut down trees and that we might not ever use, and it's just like so much waste. And they would never do that. Like, we could have learned so much from them, but instead we marginalized them and treated them like, you know, basically like slaves.
Like savages. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, read Stephen Ambrose's great book on the Lewis and Clark expedition. You know, think about all of the things that they were able to learn through, you know, during that excursion all the way out west. Think about, you're right, what we could have learned, like when, you know, killing a buffalo, like all of the, using every piece of the buffalo, right? Rotating the land to take care of the land when they were farming. All of those things. Making sure that they were sharing. I mean, there's all of these pieces of their history that are quite remarkable. We just come in with our massive industrialization, just run roughshod over the entire ecosystem, wipe out the buffalo.
Well, and just out of curiosity, has that changed? Has the education of that history changed at all in schools, or is it still the same? Like, do they still use the same books?
Yeah, I can't speak to what they're teaching now in this, some of the core, what is it called? What is it called? Somebody help me out. I'm losing the number. Core. Someone in the chat.
Common Core?
Common Core, yeah. I can tell you that, like, what my son learned about African Americans, what my son learned about the Native American experience 2 years ago in school in the second grade? No, third grade. He's in the fifth grade. Yeah, in the third grade was pretty impressive. Like, he had to learn about every different group of Indian in America. He had to learn about the Plains tribes, all of that, and he learned all about like the wiping out of these. He learned about the Trail of Tears. I was stunned. I had to separately read about the Trail of Tears and the Cherokee Indians in college, learning about modern Native American history in college. And my son was getting to learn this, so hopefully that's changed. Hopefully some of that is being taught. But if you have the 1776 report from President Trump, guess what? You're going to get this friendly relationship. You know, we weren't that bad to the Native Americans. We were friends. Things were fine. Don't pay attention to this. We're totally fine. We're all friends here in America. Sure, we might have killed a few Indians from time to time.
I mean, really,
sure,
think about
it. Might have lynched a few people.
Pompeo even sounds like a Native American name.
Right. So sit back and read the 1776 report.
I think I'll pass.
Line your birdcage with it. Yeah, I think it's a smart move. We got some more news to get to here before we wrap things up today. I want to talk about this power sharing thing. And this has gotten a lot of press over the past 24 hours, and I want to call attention to it because CNN, this article has been circulating around, and you know, on the surface, it's very easy to read these mainstream media news articles and immediately jump to a conclusion. So you read that, not only the headline, but then also go through the article and you think, oh my God, McConnell and Schumer, they are literally about to have a power sharing agreement. And I've seen all of these people complaining about, oh my God, these Democrats are about to cede power to Republicans. And this is going to be a disaster. This is going to be a huge problem for Democrats. Why would they give power in this one power sharing agreement in an evenly divided Senate? Well, there's a couple things at play. Procedurally, they need to come to an agreement about what they're going to do. But the way that CNN paints it with their own headline is that Democrats are going to be sharing power. That Democrats are going to share power with Mitch McConnell. So I guess that Georgia election didn't mean crap. That's what CNN would have you believe. That's what the mainstream media hopes you will believe, that, look, we're going to be at status quo. We're not going to get any meaningful stimulus packages through. We're just going to be focused on the status quo. Nothing's going to change. That's what the big media billionaire elites want you to believe. But the truth is actually much more granular. So Tom Daschle, of course, former Senate Majority Leader, Democrat, penned an interesting piece in the Washington Post and talks about a number of the different areas where the Democrats will actually have significant power. So this is exact opposite of what CNN is publishing. Okay. CNN is telling you they're going to power share and Democrats are going to screw themselves. Now, it is possible that Democrats could screw themselves by kowtowing too much to the Republicans, could bend over too much for the Republicans, take up the tailpipe too much for the Republicans. Instead, they should push forward with their agenda and don't give a rat's behind what Mitch McConnell wants. My fear is that they'll kowtow too much to Republicans. It's possible they'll do that. It's possible. But it will have nothing to do with the way things are structured. So, you know, because they have a 50-50 Senate, they have to put in place some procedural things ahead of them working together. In fact, they have to negotiate rules for committee structure and resources for this 50-50 chamber. You can't just start, because who's in charge here? How many people will we have on this committee? How will we bring bills to the floor? All of these things need to be ironed out. So the reason that they're actually putting this stuff in place is they're actually using what happened back in 2001 when Tom Daschle was there and Trent Lott were there. They came up with a power sharing agreement, not a power sharing agreement. They came up because, you know, Republicans were technically still going to be in the majority. Trent Lott was still the majority leader. How are they going to iron these things out? So they came up with a basic framework. And that's actually great for Democrats. Let me explain. See, again, if you read these mainstream media headlines, CNN, they want you to believe that this, you know, it's going to be entrenched Washington. Nothing's going to change. When in fact, it's actually good for Democrats, because I'll skip through all of the legalese here, but there's they have four big challenges that Tom Daschle outlines in his opinion piece. But the fourth one is the most important. And the fourth challenge is procedural. They have to come up with a procedural way that they bring bills to the floor. So think about stimulus, think about infrastructure bill, all of those things. What is the procedure for bringing this to the floor of the Senate? Well, normally in a Senate committee, that's where legislation goes to die, okay? It never hits the floor. It can be tabled. It never hits the floor because it just goes there to die. And it does not proceed to a full Senate vote. But in a 50-50 Senate, the tie-breaking vote is essentially Kamala Harris. Now, because you'll have committees where they have 50-50 on the committee, they'll have 50% Democrat, 50% Republican. Instead of them arguing and letting legislation die, they are agreeing. We hope that this is the final agreement, and we hope that Chuck Schumer and Mitch McConnell go along with this the way they did back in 2001. The final agreement will basically say, hey, instead of letting this shit die in committee, just bring it to the floor for a vote. That means that instead of all of this legislation that we are hoping to pass just gets killed and killed and killed and killed in committees, no, it's going to slip out of that process right to the floor for a vote. And it'll have a time limit of 4 hours for a debate. This means, folks, I come back to this BS from CNN. They're going to evenly, and if you read through the article, it's like, oh man, you know, they're ceding power. It's not going to be good. But what's actually going to happen is great for Democrats if they don't kowtow to Republicans and much power to a group that under others would never, ever, ever do the same thing for them. They would never kowtow to Democrats, right? Mitch McConnell is not bending over for Bernie Sanders. Mitch McConnell is not bending over for any Democrat, and neither should Democrats. If they want to pass meaningful stimulus and infrastructure bills and all of it, they need to stand firm and not give a rat's behind about how many Republicans are coming along for the ride. And now, if they agree to this set of negotiation and procedures, they can bring bills directly to the Senate floor. And with a 4-hour debate time limit, they can be cranking through bills. So in many ways, this is actually great news for Democrats. Instead of having stuff die in committee, So I want to set the record straight on that. I've seen a lot of misinformation about this process over the past 24 hours. I've seen headlines and tweets from people saying, oh my gosh, these Democrats are such wimps. They're giving up all kinds of control. It's not true. So it's good news. It's good news if we want to pass meaningful stimulus in this country. It's good news if we want to get some big things through. Hopefully, we will not have that kind of blockage in the Senate. So I'm hoping that these rules are finalized in short order and we can pass this very, very soon. So, yes. A final piece of news is today is David Dayan wrote this about the student loan cancellation process. And basically, conservatives are trying to use every citation that they can in the education department as to why student loan cancellation should be illegal. And they're all pointing, of course, to Antonin Scalia and his rulings on all of this. And we should all be concerned about that because, as David Dayan points out, I mean, we have an opportunity here in this country now to eliminate up to 50,000 or more in student loan debt. And basically, it was like this idea of circulating this memo among Republicans is like a preemptive strike. For several years now, scholars and advocates have argued that the Education Department has all the discretion it needs through a provision of the Higher Education Act known as the Compromise and Settlement Authority to stop collection, reduce the amount owed, or forgive entirely all student loans of millions of borrowers. In fact, they've already used it during the pandemic. They've already enacted a unilaterally pausing of student loan payments during the pandemic. Without any additional interest, they have this provision. And by the way, it's been supported in the courts. Though, apparently, in this memo, they're saying that federal dollars can only be spent according to the letter of the difficult judgments reached by Congress. Meaning that Higher Education Act must be interpreted narrowly. And that, and this is a Scalia opinion, and then it says, it quotes Scalia directly, saying that right now we should not, it's the cardinal rule of statutory interpretation that no provision shall be construed to be entirely redundant. Basically saying that how we interpret this statutory law from Scalia means that the Education Department doesn't have this authority, and you should not think that you can wipe away student loan debt indefinitely. So everyone sort of on the conservative side is hanging their hats on these Scalia interpretations of the Education Department and what this means. The Biden administration, make no mistake, is under enormous pressure right now to cancel $1.7 trillion in student loan debt. It would categorically alter the future of our country if we do this. Millions of people could have this student loan debt wiped away. I would push further and get credit card debt removed. These predatory credit card companies that go after children right when they get to college for the very first time with 18, 22, 23% credit card debt. And we should eliminate this type of predatory lending in the United States. There's no reason that a college kid should have $10,000 credit card. Absolutely not. Other countries don't even have credit cards, or they have $500 credit cards. That's about it. Other countries, like European countries, they don't even use credit cards. And by the way, to get a credit card, you have to show that you have that much money in the bank in order to pay for it. But we are such a credit card debt, Wall Street run economy in the United States that all of these Wall Street bankers salivate and go after these poor kids. And we need better protections in the United States. So I hope that Joe Biden stands strong on this. I've heard some waffling on his side about this student loan debt forgiveness. Stand strong, President-elect Biden. Stand strong. Eliminate student loan debt in this country. And turn your guns on eliminating credit card debt. And stop this predatory lending practices in the United States. That would help millions of people. Could completely alter the future for these kids and these families across the country. I'd love to hear your thoughts on all of these things. Please subscribe to the channel. Boom, right there. Follow us on Twitch, on Facebook, and Twitter. Really appreciate that. We are watching a couple of key things today. Janet Yellen is going to be facing the Senate in her confirmation hearing. And a couple of things to watch on that front will be interest rates. Where does she come down on interest rates? Will she, in the past, she's wanted to raise interest rates. I think that really hurt working class people. Will she be pressured to keep those low in working with the Federal Reserve? So she will be confirmed today. Hopefully, we'll see. Or it could be dragged on. We don't know. And we also know Wednesday afternoon, after the president is sworn in, David Ossoff and Raphael Warnock will be sworn in the Senate from Georgia. And that will elevate Senate Leader Mitch McConnell, Chuck Schumer, as Senate Majority Leader. And they can start getting some work done. So, folks, we've got a short amount of time left. I hope you'll all join us tomorrow. Please turn on the bell notification. I'm going to send out a note later today once we get the time set. We're going to have our live inauguration show tomorrow. So I hope you'll all join us for our live inaugural episode. We'll be here live watching it. We'll watch the speeches, the drama. Grover will be here watching. Make sure our kids watch as well. Make sure that they're all paying attention to what's going on, because there's a lot's going to change in the next 24 hours. Any good super chats come in, I can take here before we wrap things up. Let's see. Oh, Shannon asks, thank you for your super chat. When will John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock be seated? They will be seated on Wednesday after Biden is sworn in. GMS says, you worked with Tucker. Does he believe the lies he tells America? Or is he actually a good person? Yes. You know, Tucker and I disagree on a lot politically, but he's always been an amazing friend to me and amazing to my family. I'm friends with his family. So, yes, I was a co-anchor with him for years, and he's been a good friend and a very kind person. And honestly, regardless of what you think about politics, et cetera, one of the most thoughtful people, who would go out of his way, like every day he would pay for, he'd buy coffee for every member of the crew every day. He would just hand his credit card out to someone during the show, and they'd run over to Starbucks and come back with like 30 cups of coffee. He'd pay for it every day.
Well, he seems like the kind of guy that would, if you had a disagreement, it wouldn't affect your friendship. Like you and I, we don't agree on 100% of the things, but it doesn't affect our friendship. You know?
Right. We used to get in debates on the show all the time about different things. And, that's what makes the world go round. Right. And heck, he worked on a show called Crossfire, so he can handle a good debate, Trump needs to pardon Snowden and Assange today if he wants to leave on a high note, Darnell Hibbler. Thank you for your super chat. I agree. I mean, here's something that Trump could do as of this morning, Trump has the lowest approval rating of any president in U.S. history. This morning, pull up the latest approval rating for him. Gallup has the lowest rated presidency, I think, in history. Last Trump job approval is 34%. The average is 41%. It's the worst evaluation of his presidency. Sorry, it's the worst of his presidency, 34%. Think that the president's doing a good job. So he leaves on a low note. Yeah, if he wants to leave on a high note, perhaps. Here's an idea. Pardon Assange. Because if he wants to piss off the political establishment in Washington, if he wants to piss off the Mitch McConnells of the world, if he wants to piss off the Joe Bidens of the world, if he wants to piss off Washington establishment, Hollywood establishment, not even Hollywood, Washington, Wall Street, pardon Assange and Snowden. Wouldn't it be great?
Now, if they're pardoned by him, is there anything they can do to revoke those once Biden's in office? You know, like if he came back here, could they still not make his life a living hell, or is it like it's done?
I mean, they could always bring up. See, the thing is, it's on the charges that he's currently charged with. I mean, if they wanted to trump up new charges, then he could be charged with something else. So it'd be new charges, and he wouldn't be pardoned for those new charges, as far as I understand. They could still make his life a living hell. Just They could do whatever. They could put him on a terrorist. They could put him on a no-fly list. They could do all sorts of stuff to futz with him, you know? I don't think there's a chance in hell that he's going to come back to the United States, though. Do you? Like, if he's pardoned, that just means he gets out of prison in England and he can actually live his life instead of having to hide in embassies, you know? Laura Paddleford, thank you for your super chat, says, would love to become a supporting member, but unsure how to do that. Oh, that's easy, Laura. All you need to do is just go to morninginvest.com/join is how you become a channel member. So we have 14 new channel members this morning. I appreciate it. That's how you can support independent journalism. And look, you don't have to do that in order to support the show. One thing you can do is simply smash the like button. That actually really, really, really helps us in the eyes of YouTube. And what that does is that it'll actually share our message with more people that need to hear this. You know, there might be some people out there that are sitting on the fence about how that some of this stuff may affect his or her family, not, you know, unsure about it. And this might put this video in front of those people by you smashing that like button. So that's how you can support us. Another way is to simply share our video on Facebook, on Twitter. You can share it via email to a family or friend. That's another great way. That's totally free. So any way you can support it, we'd be grateful. Grover would love it.
Hulk smash.
He says thank you. Hulk smash that like button. Let me see how many other super chats we got here. Thank you for all your super chats. Carol Melendez, thank you. Says Clayton and David for all you do. Hope your dad is feeling better, Clayton. Smash the like button, please. Thank you. Well, my dad ate 75% of his breakfast the other day, which is better than normal after his stroke and COVID. He's having a real hard time walking. It's amazing to go one day where he's literally fine walking, driving the car. The next minute is at the bank teller trying to form words. Can't. They call the ambulance, take him to the hospital, and now like needs like a lift to get put in a chair. Like that's I'm like, how does that happen? Like, how does that happen with a stroke? It's just terrible. John Shanks says the reason we sugarcoat history is to our kids is because we're ashamed of our own history, and that is sad. Yeah, it's sad. You know, I have family members, like I've been digging through my ancestry, and on my mom's side, it's interesting. Like I have the Hooper family. So I part of my family comes from near Edinburgh, Scotland, right before the Revolutionary War. So Thomas Absalon Hooper, and then Thomas Absalon Hooper Jr., I think, came to the United States. I think he, and then I believe, I forget exactly which one of them, was a signer on the Declaration of Independence in my family. Fought in the Revolution, was captured by the British, escaped, captured again. It was like multiple times he was captured. I don't know what that says. But then like a little bit further in our history, I've got like one side of my family that fought in the Union side of the Civil War, another on the Kentucky side that was a Confederate, who refused to carry a gun though. Like, I think he was like a clerk or something. And it was we pulled like newspaper clippings at his death from the Civil War. And he never wanted to raise arms. But he fought for the Confederacy. So I'm not proud of that. Right. Like the biggest US traitors in American history. But you have to shine a light on it and talk about it. You know, I just learned that. That doesn't mean like it's in my DNA and I'm so, you know. But we should be able to have these discussions. Consistency says, is this the new Berlin Wall? I think what you're referring to is this. Oops. Sorry.
That's complete. That's space.
Is this. Consistency, thank you for your super chat, says, is this the new Berlin Wall? Yeah, this is Washington, D.C. Look at your peaceful transition of power right there. Unbelievable. And this was the message coming into D.C. this morning. Avoid travel to D.C. Like if you're on 395 coming north, going north towards Baltimore, you're on 95 coming up. No, just avoid it. Just don't even go. Baller, thank you for your super chat. Says Tucker is awesome. Called out Sidney Powell. He's not afraid. I mean, he called out, famously called out Sarah Palin for being a total phony. I mean, he's called out Mitch McConnell. So, you know, Tucker is a strange bird. Curious what you guys think about that. About Tucker's Julian Assange message. Assange message. It's hard to say. Well, thank you guys. We're going to be back tonight at 4 p.m. Eastern time. I have plenty to talk about. This is the final Trump presidency as we enter the 24-hour period. Can't believe it. And then, of course, we will be back for our inauguration special tomorrow. So I hope you all will join us for Inauguration Day. We'll have our normal show, and then I'm going to be live. I don't know what David's plans are. What are your plans, man? Are you going to be able to join us? I got to find the timing and all of that. You might be in the middle of other stuff, but
yeah, just let me know the time and I'll try. I still got my schedule, my streaming schedule. So
we'll have that because I'll be live. We'll have the speeches. We'll be listening to President Biden speak for the very first time as president. We're going to hear the other speeches. We'll watch the drama unfold. Hopefully everything will be peaceful. I'm sure with this 30,000 people military that's down there, this peaceful transition of power. That's peace right there. That's what peace looks like. Like, hey, I got a question for you. Is this America or is this the green zone in Baghdad?
This is what democracy looks like.
Yeah, that's democracy right there. Look at all those people just sharing their thoughts about democracy. Can't do it. Try to do it on Facebook and Twitter. You'll be taken down. Thanks, everyone, for joining us today. Much love to all of you. We will see you back here at 4 p.m. Eastern time. Ciao, everyone.